Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book. And let's see what we're going to do. We're going to say, let's see what we're going to say. And we'll give you a little Everly Brothers, a little love tune.
Until I kissed ya. How did I exist until I kissed ya? Never had you on my mind. Now you're there all the time. Never knew what I missed till I kissed ya. I kissed ya. Oh yeah. I kissed ya. My life's not the same now that I kissed ya. Oh yeah. You got a will about ya. Now I can't live without ya. Never knew what I missed till I kissed ya. I kissed ya. Oh yeah.
You don't realize what you do to me, and I didn't realize what a kiss could be.
You got a will about you. Now I can't live without you. Never knew what I missed till I kissed you. I kissed you. Oh yeah.
Realize what you do to me, and I didn't realize what a kiss could be.
You got a will about you. Now I can't live without you. Never knew what I missed till I kissed you. I kissed you. Oh yeah, I kissed you.
We're back. Okay. We're having a little trouble downloading the news. So let us go to another tune, and we'll put this tune out as a dedication to all the guys who are getting a tough time with PTSD coming back from overseas. And we'll dedicate this tune to all of the students that are losing their minds for whatever reason in colleges, for whatever reason. All these kids are having problems, man. There are too many suicides. Too many suicides. What always amazes me is all of these people with the problems. They go to, like this one kid, he had two psychiatrists. But I don't believe he had a minister or a rabbi or a pastor. You know, two psychiatrists, that adds up to a lot of bucks. You go sit in church and you get comfortable. And you talk to somebody. And what will it cost you? $5 in a collection? And you can put in an IOU. And they'll never take it from you. Yeah, everybody turns to everybody but God. They'll turn to booze. They'll turn to drugs. But they'll never turn to God. and he's the only guy that can help him. Okay, we're going into Walid Shubat's mail tonight because, ooh, this is dangerous. This is dangerous. Okay, Walid Shubat is like a clarion call about relationships between politicians and bad people from the Middle East. And he's already upset a few people. While we're talking about that, two guys I want to plug. Plug number one, a guy named Joe Walsh. I caught him on a 970, the answer, 970 a.m. He was on between 5 and 6 o'clock. His program runs 5 to 8, so if you really like him, you could probably pick him up on the Internet for the other 2 hours. But he is on 970 from 5 to 6, and this guy pulls no punches. He speaks from the heart, and you got to listen to him to get a gist of what he's talking about. Now, the other guy we got to plug is the only guy that's fighting to save the Constitution, and that's Mark Levin. And one of his arch enemies always makes fun of him because he's always talking about the Constitution. But if it wasn't for the Constitution, his arch enemy would be on a troop train now, going to fight for Al-Qaeda against his wishes. Yeah. Okay, so Mark Levin is calling Eric Cantor a turncoat. In not so many words, but he's saying he's lying. And he's running for re-election in Virginia. Now, you know Virginia is about to go communist, right? Virginia has fallen. The Party of Death has bought at the governor's seat there and put on the throne Terry McAuliffe, who was a bag man for the Clintons. If you go to my website, I believe it's www.captainsblog.us, you'll see Terry McAuliffe at the convention, the Democamo convention, with his gavel. And the caption I put underneath it is, "Going once, going twice, sold the USA." Yeah. And he bought the house for the Clintons up in Chappaqua. Yeah, Chappaqua, Chappaquiddick, where will murders take place. They all have the same sounding name. And he bought their house for them with champagne contributions. Well, we don't know that. We can't prove it. You can't get under the Freedom of Information Act. You can only get to the outskirts of the Harvard safe that holds Obama bin Laden's real intent and records. We'd like to see those records. You can't. They're sealed. Well, are they here? No, they're up in the Pribilof Islands. Yeah. Okay, so what's Walid talking about? Let's see. Walid is saying, House Intelligence Committee Chair, hobnobbing with former member of state sponsor of terrorism. Representative Mike Rogers of Michigan. Oh, he's under the influence of the Michigan Muslims. The soon-to-be talk radio congressman is putting another highly disturbing notch in his belt. Yeah, well, you know, Al Gore, I mean, he sold that little dinky communist radio station to Al Jazeera, and he made $500 million. Yeah, and I'm over here getting peanuts. And not only that, what's her name? Lady Huffington, Arianna Huffington. She took advantage of all those dopey college jerks, and she made them print up a whole news edition for her. And she never paid them. And she sold them out for $370 million to AOL. This is all alleged. I have to say alleged because if my numbers are wrong, I could be sued. Okay, so Mike Rogers. Hey, Mike, how's it feel to really sell out? He is scheduled to be a speaker at an event that will have Ground Zero Mosque Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf and his wife, Daisy Khan, as guests of honor. Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer to how many nukes in Iran? Is there one for you? When viewed in conjunction with all the suspect things Roger has done relative to the Benghazi investigation and his defense of Uma Abedin as an American patriot, which Shubata.com has chronicled, this is perhaps one of the more shameful. Yes, money can do things. Money opens all doors. That's why I say one term per termite. It takes them a year to find out what to do with the envelopes that keep coming in. And then they got 3 years left, and then they're gone. And then a new guy comes in, and he's got to learn how to steal all over again. And while it is saying the U.S. government is doing nothing to rescue persecuted Christians, but Obama announced today he's going to parlay $5 billion to create a mercenary unit to fight somebody in Syria. Yeah, fight global warming. There's a new jihad group called Global Warming, and he's going to fight it. Yeah. Rep. Mike Rogers caught honoring Ground Zero Mosque Imam. You know what? They don't want that to be a sacred site, not Ground Zero. They don't want that. That's why they put the bodies in the basement. Yeah, you can go down there if you want. They got a little souvenir shop there. You can buy Muslim box cutters. And you can buy jihad war cries. So, let's see what he's saying here. But this is the most troubling news. The house of the event, which house intelligence committee, the host of the event, which house intelligence committee chairman, will be delivering the keynote speech, is the vice president of the Muslim organization that has once held senior positions with the government, is identified as a state sponsor of terrorism. Let me tell you, if you can get an American agency to identify a state sponsor of terrorism, they haven't gotten the word yet that there's a lot of money if they don't do that. At the time, Osama bin Laden lived in that country where he was seeking safe harbor. The leader of that country is still in power. He's still in power, that leader, that terrible person. Yes, and what happened? You know, when I got the flying fingers, and when I do my flying fingers, I lose things. Let's see here. The leader in that country is still in power and is wanted for crimes against humanity. While ICRD's connections to Muslim Brotherhood front groups in the U.S., laid out in a letter to Rogers, is itself disturbing, the connections of the organization's vice president of a state sponsor of terrorism should be greater cause for alarm, not just concern. The ICRD website lists Abu Bakr Y. Ahmed al-Shingieti as its vice president for preventive engagement. Yeah. Hey, Mom, guess who I brought home? We're engaged. Shubat.com has written extensively about al-Shingieti. And you can click and you can see. Yep. In addition to his other roles, he has a history that includes time as an extremely prominent figure with the government of Sudan. Is that where they're hanging that Christian woman that's pregnant? I hear she had the baby. You know, it's really terrible what they do. They do what these people do. They are real savages. They're 7th century animal savages. The older brother of President of the United States, Malik Obama, works as an executive secretary for the Islamic Dawah Organization under Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir, a figure used by the International Criminal Court for Crimes Against Humanity. You think that letting 40 veterans die in Phoenix, Arizona is crimes against humanity? Who's going to pay for that? And those people got bonuses. What were they, killing bonuses? Sudan, and not only that, now there's charges of sexual harassment at that organization. And John McCain was there all the time. And never was John McCain ever brought to account for all the drugs in Arizona and the shoddy treatment of great Americans. Yeah, John McCain was never once had a finger pointed at him. And so this organization in Sudan, listed by the State Department, boy, they must have tried to get that taken off the list. I guess Hillary and Huma forgot to get it off. And speaking of Hillary and Huma, when the girls were laughing about Gaddafi getting sodomized with rods just before they put a bullet in his head, who created the invasion of Libya? Who created the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi? The guy had one foot on a banana peel and the other in the grave. Why did we have to take him out? And what kind of operation did we create to take him out? Had to be planes. American planes had to be involved. What was going on? What was the sinister plot that led to the fall of Gaddafi, who probably would have died in bed in a couple of years? What was the urgency of taking over Libya, liberating Libya? Yeah. Perhaps not so coincidentally, the Obama administration wants to have Saddam removed from the list. I just said it, right? As for Rogers, a former FBI special agent, he must know the background of this organization, as was reported to Shubat by a confidential source earlier this year. Rogers also knows about Malik's ties to the government of Sudan and was looking into the case during his trip to Egypt. Well, we're out of Iraq and they're killing each other. And Obama just said sayonara to Afghanistan. And then he said, oh, and by the way, I'd like to give a shout-out to our undercover CIA chief here, Barry. Barry, would you stand up, take a bow, get the cameras on him, everybody? Oh, he's not here? Oh, well, you know what? He's probably home with his wife, and Gloria, and five children, and they all live in on Benson Avenue in Sacramento. I think the number's 347. Okay. I'm just, I better not say any more. Yeah, we're in trouble, man. We're in big trouble. We got too many people hurting us. And you know what? We got too much government. Okay, so we gave you a little clue that our boy says that this guy, Rogers, is a bad guy. Okay, they're going after Pope Francis pals around with Nazis. Well, listen, this guy is a Christian, and I guess he's not a Catholic. But if he says Pope Francis, in his recent visit to Israel, the word peace was advanced instead of outlawing evil, history always proves that peace cannot be achieved with evildoers who hate Jews and use propaganda and lies to advance their supremacist agenda. World War II taught us that lesson, but sadly the world has forgotten those lessons. No, they haven't. We're right up to date. We're ready to attack the Nazis. If the Nazis come to power, we're ready. We've seen all the movies. We know who all the names are. But we don't know anything about the Soviet Supreme. We don't know that Joseph Stalin tried to convince Roosevelt at Yalta to kill 60,000 German POW officers, like equivalent to the 6,000 Polish officers that Stalin executed in the Katyn Forest, or the 30,000 Russian officers that Stalin didn't trust anymore and had them killed. They tell you about Georgi Zhukov, the guy that fought like a tiger for Russia. They don't tell you that he was arrested when he got too popular, did they? Yeah. And then when Stalin died, they let him out of prison. I think that's the story. You could Google it. It's all interesting. But Roosevelt thought Stalin was kidding. He thought Stalin was kidding when he said, execute the 60,000 German officers you're holding. And Roosevelt joked and said, how about we just do 49,000? How's that? How's that? Joking with a bigger murderer than Hitler. But everybody likes Stalin. Everybody likes communism. Look, we got a president. Yeah, this is our legacy from World War II, a communist president. Okay, so let me see what this guy is saying about my friend Pope, the Holy Man. Let's see. There are only two ways to look at Pope Francis. Either he is very naive or he himself is evil. And God does not see things in a gray area. Either you act with righteousness or you act with evil. Nowhere does ignorance prevail before God, and especially if you are in such leadership position as the Pope is. Well, that's what Wallet feels. And Wallet is entitled under the freedom of speech guaranteed by the Constitution. Yeah. But let's see. Let me see what else. What are you saying? He's from Argentina, the Pope. Is he from Argentina? It remains to be seen. I'll withhold judgment. I respect the man, and I'm glad we got him. So let me see. History will prove me wrong. So we're coming out of here. I'm going to say goodbye to Walid. A little disappointed in Walid tonight. Yeah, I like it when he goes after Congressman. Trey Gowdy may call out Mike Rogers on Benghazi. Man challenges Muslims, a Muslim take man, cut his head off, wrap it in plastic. Wrap it in plastic? I mean, what's wrong with aluminum foil? Yeah, and dump his head into the local mosque. Isn't that something? They dump it into the local mosque. I was in Saudi Arabia with a deeply religious zealot, and he picked me up at the airport and was driving me to his house, his little palace. And every time we passed a mosque, he would get in and run in and say a prayer. About the third mosque, he says to me, you know what we do when we catch anybody drinking alcohol? Right? He's looking at my Irish face and a beer belly. He's talking to my beer belly. Little does he know it's Oreo cookies and Coca-Cola. But anyway, I said, no, what do you do? He says, we take them in front of the mosque and we whip them. I said, man, you sure would need a drink after that. Unbelievable. Courageous Arab turns Zionist, disrupts Palestinian Nakba event. Perpetrator walks into a police station and murders a victim in the name of Allah. Muslims gang rape 19-year-old girl. Girl runs to the police where five Muslim rape her and then shove her complaint paper. Oh, I don't want to even tell you. Unbelievable. Unbelievable, and that's what's going on in the peaceful religion. Yes, the religion of peace, a piece of you, a piece of me. Yeah, nobody's buying it anymore. There's, and you know what? A lot of people are now using the word communist. The word communist used to be a verboten to be used because you could be accused of being a McCarthyite. But more and more people are using the word communist. Visualize George Patton today. This is what a guy is saying. In the meantime, we'll give you a tune. And let's see what we got. Do a Katrina Valente tune. It's got a nice high voice.
breeze and I are whispering goodbye to dreams we used to share. Ours was a lifetime that seemed constant as the moon, ending in a strange, mournful tune. And all about me, they know you have departed without me, and we wondered why the breeze and I. The breeze and I.
Choice to renounce your faith or face execution, what would you do? I would renounce my faith with my fingers crossed. I hope it is a question you never have to answer. In the United States, that may come to pass, because as the country goes communist, eventually there'll be purges of religious people. Right now they're working on the Pentagon. The atheists are working on the Pentagon. And they're making successful inroads. I hope it's a question you never have to answer. But for Miriam Ibrahim, wife of an American citizen, the question and the consequences are real. After being given 3 days to decide her fate and renounce her faith, she appeared before a Sudanese court and bravely stated, "I am a Christian." And the judge immediately replied, "I sentence you to be hanged to death." And then there's a guy raising money for her. His name is Ralph Reed, and he's the Faith and Freedom Coalition. And he's asking everybody to ask John Kerry to take time out from betraying his country, and President Obama to take time out from selling out the country. The army bigger than the American army that Obama bragged about, it's up off the Ukraine right now. To take immediate action to save Miriam Ibrahim. Haven't you learned the lesson of Benghazi? Obama's not going to help anybody in uniform. Well, she's not wearing a uniform. She's got a cross. That's a uniform. Right now, Miriam is awaiting execution. The Sudanese government delayed her execution until they see some scratch. Oh, no. She's going to give birth and wean her second child. But just today, Miriam gave birth to a little girl named Maya, which means her execution is either sooner than ever. And we're running out of time to save her life. This is the same government that wanted to sell Osama bin Laden to the Clintons, and the Clintons didn't have enough money. Yes, they offered to turn him over to the Clintons, and the Clintons said, "We're not interested. We're kicking the can down the road." and let the World Trade Center collapse and be on a bush. That's why I call it the Clinton Towers. So she has a boy and a girl, newborn Maya, and Martin is 20 months old. Sudan has appallingly kept them away from their American father, Dr. Daniel Awadi. The children are locked in a prison with their mother. Sudanese law mandates that children born to Muslim fathers are considered Muslim, and a Christian father cannot raise a Muslim child. Sudan is refusing to allow Dr. Wadi to take his toddler son and his newborn daughter outside of the prison walls. Martin, who is at the age of developing, should be exploring his home and learning to cope with fears and phobias. Instead, the kid sits in prison with his mother, who is shackled by her ankles as if she was a slave to be sold. That slavery is still good in the Sudan, man. You in Nigeria, you can buy 300 girls for $12 a piece. Yeah, all for the religion of Islam. Yes, the funds go there. And Maryam, who was raised by her Christian mother after being abandoned by her Muslim father, has only known Christianity. Oh, there's a responsible guy. Due to archaic and inhumane Muslim laws in the Sudan. Yeah, they've upgraded them in the rest of the world. Yeah, you can run your wife over in Michigan. The courts have ruled her to be an apostate because the father who abandoned her was a Muslim. Apostasy in Sudan is punishable by death. Oh, you atheists are in for a big surprise when these guys show up. You'll be calling for the troops, and they can keep their crosses, can't they? Obama, State Department has refused to even take the small... Why should we help them out? We wouldn't help out Benghazi. We're not going to help out some foreigner. Yeah. When Maryam's husband went to the U.S. Embassy for help in releasing his son and wife, John Kerry's bureaucrats demanded he provide DNA evidence that Martin was his son. Dr. Wadi waved his American passport and Martin's birth certificate as they closed the doors on him. John Kerry, you've been betraying people since Nam, and your day in hell is coming, and you'll be right in boiler number 3 with another communist, the Ted Kennedy. The State Department has even arrogantly refused to respond to the initial letter of 2 American state senators who demanded action. What did it cost? A little ink and a piece of paper? That's really demanding. A letter from a senator, oh, that'll do it. Meanwhile, Barack Obama has deployed the United States military to search for Nigerian schoolgirls. As Michelle Obama tweets, bring our girls home. They're not our girls. They're Nigeria's girls. What's Nigeria doing? It's like the Mexicans. The Mexicans, their father is the Mexican government. Their mother is the Mexican government. Why isn't the Mexican government taking care of their children? As you read this, Obama's government knows exactly where Martin and Maya are. The children born to an American citizen are next to their shackled mother. What a hellhole that trap must be. To say the inaction of Obama is outrageous. Hey, listen, man. Do you know how many Americans have died in Afghanistan under Obama? You have never heard the media say once in the last 6 months how many Americans have died in Afghanistan. The last time I checked, it was around 2,100. 2,100. You know how many died in Afghanistan under Bush's 8 years? 461. This from a guy, president, who lost a 46 in a chopper shootdown that never should have happened. Unbelievable. He can't even protect kids in school. He's going to outlaw the guns? He's going to outlaw what? Whose guns? The good people's guns? How's he going to outlaw guns in the ghetto? Do you know, I know a cop that went into a ghetto on a raid and came out with a 3.5 rocket launcher and found C4 in a refrigerator in the ghetto. Yeah, unbelievable, man. But that's the way the cookie crumbles. We'll give you another tune. And what did we do? Did we do a tune? Yeah, we did Katrina Valente. You want to hear the, this is the economy song.
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick, mortar, and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, he will look swell, full of that Yankee doodle-dee-dum. Half a million boots went marching through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. Hey, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al, Al all the time. Hey, don't you remember? I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, and I made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Hey, brother, ain't got a dime about you, have you? And once I built a tower, yes, a tower to the sun, of brick, mortar, and lime. Yes, I'm the fella built the tower, and now it's done. Hey, buddy, ain't got a dime about you, have you? Once in khaki suits, he will look swell, full of that Yankee doodle-dee-dum. Half a million boots went marching through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember? Don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al, Al all the time. Don't you remember? I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare a dime?
And today the Russians won't give us a ride to outer space. Once we built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. And today the Russians won't give us a ride to outer space because we've been bad and we have to be punished. But of course our president will save us. He'll get us back into space. My name is Charlie and I'm a veteran. And today I would like to share a real life experience that I recently had with the U.S. Army. But I'm going to provide a little background first. Like my father and his father, I served my country because I love America and felt it was my duty to protect its people. I volunteered for combat twice during my service, deployed to Iraq, Afghanistan, and I have been engaged on the ground where the axe meets the chopping block and where things are not nice. I did well in the military and received awards, early promotions, service schools, and other opportunities that I seized whenever possible. I even completed credit hours of college-level coursework and maintained a 4.0 GPA in my first few years of service. I forgot to mention I didn't graduate high school and entered the military only with a GED, having dropped out in the ninth grade. In 2012, after being selected by my peers for an advanced position, suite and tie job, let me just, I hate this. I always hit, I click too hard. Let me see here. After being a suite and tie job, I received orders to an overseas duty station for a hardship tour. I had been back with my family less than a year, and my chain of command offered me three options in this situation: reenlist for stabilization to stay in my new position, reenlist to have enough time left on my contract to take my family with me overseas, or sign a declination of continued service statement and end my career. I had 16 months left in service, and I chose none of the above and decided I would leave again for the third time in about 3 years. About a month before I was to ship out, my stepfather passed away on the couch in the living room of his home. My mother found him returning from some errands and was utterly and completely devastated. She had to sit with his body and call police, EMS alone. I requested emergency leave and it was granted. So a travel tour attended his funeral and tried to offer what comfort I could. Upon my return, I shipped out within a couple of days. There's a poll that says, what grade would you give Obama as president? 10 toilets below Jimmy Carter. Shortly into my overseas tour, my son's mother was tragically killed in an automobile accident. I immediately requested emergency leave again, was granted only 8 days after receiving an Army emergency relief loan so I could pay for my flight. After landing stateside, I had no money, so I got a loan from my bank and started the drive to my son. By the time I got there, there had been an emergency custody order, temporary, signed by a judge, awarding full custody of my son to his grandmother and suspending all my rights while I was overseas. I sought legal counsel, hired an attorney, and filed a legal response that would have been put in place in my absence with the little time I had left. Does this sound like you guys have fallen on a little bit of hard times? Oh, man. They got a picture of him with four Afghans. Though I was unable to attend the funeral because of time and distance, I had family that did. They sat with my son and made sure he was not alone in such terrible circumstances. They were a lot closer to the location than I was and were able to get there quickly, as I was not. My son's grandmother left the state directly after the funeral and hid my son until I had to return overseas. I did not even get to see his face. When I went to local government law enforcement, I was told to stay away or I'd be in jail and that it was too late. This was 2 to 3 days after the accident, but the order had been signed within 24 hours under misrepresentations and false sworn statements. I had copious documentation to disprove the claims in hand within minutes. My time was up, and after being awake more than 4 days, I had to get on a plane and report back to my unit overseas. I requested a compassionate reassignment after seeking spiritual guidance from my chaplain. And with his recommendation, this would have moved me back to the U.S. to work at a duty station close to my son. Along with the accident, my mother and grandfather both had started having some severe health problems, along with the accident. My mother and grandfather started having health problems, and I needed to be closer to home without a doubt. One of my superiors actually showed up at the chaplain's office that day and demanded to know why I was speaking to the chaplain and not to them about any issues I might be having, were their words. This don't sound like it's going to go good, does it? After about a week, I started making inquiries to the status of my request. 2 months of regular inquiries later, my battalion's personnel action officer called my desk one day and asked me if I was still pursuing the compassionate reassignment request. The office representative stated the office had not received any communications from my unit in over a month. When I brought it to the attention of my leaders, I was immediately attacked verbally and told it was all lies and that my problems didn't warrant a compassionate reassignment. I made several inquiries over the rest of my tour and was unsuccessful of any confrontation that might any confirmation that my request even left the building. My leaders began acting insulted at my inquiries and started to punish me at every instance by finding a way to consume as much of my time as possible each time I brought it up. I started working night shifts and would get called in almost daily for months for any random reason, to the point that I became sleep deprived and started having some health problems of my own. My unit had serious issues from top to bottom, and I mean it was terrible. Most of the unit was under investigation for serious allegations of criminal offenses. Most of the leaders were close enough to retirement or getting out of the military, and they really didn't care what was going on. Just so you understand how serious, there was a rape, and there were sexual assaults, more than one. There was an attempted suicide along with several suicidal ideations. I all handled horribly and with blatant disregard to the well-being of the victims or anybody else. At this point, I had no desire to continue service, and I was doing everything I could to keep my mind off this horrible situation. I was told one day that if I didn't extend so that I would have 6 months left on my contract by the end of my tour, that I wouldn't be able to go home. I tried to do that and was told I would have to extend for a full year at minimum, but I only needed 2 months to have six at the end of my tour. The outcome was I was voluntarily extended to the end of my service contract at my current station overseas, which kept me there 3 or 4 months. You got to talk to these guys when they come home. Everybody's, they got to be debriefed, man. Absolutely disgusted at what was being done to me, I kept my head down and my mouth shut and finished my time in misery. I didn't leave my barracks room unless I had to. It was more like jail than an elite unit. I was discharged honorably with a bar to reenlistment code because I had a medical profile for a torn ACL. I served three tours overseas, two of them in combat, and this horrible unit made sure I received no kind of award upon my exit from the military for their troubles. I was given a memorandum that stated I couldn't receive any award because I had a medical profile. I had lots of gear in storage and that I didn't bring because I wouldn't be using it. The cost of the gear was deducted from my pay because I couldn't turn it in at that time and place. I was even kicked out of the barracks and had to stay in a hotel the day before my flight because I couldn't clear the barracks if I was still living in them. This was all at my expense. When I went to get my tickets, I was told the Army would only fly me to my home of record or where I joined, of which were over 1,100 miles from where my family was stationed. That was where we were ordered to move by the Army. I was told, and I quote, "The Army doesn't care what you've been through or what they've done to you." To them, you are a quitter for not reenlisting. And the Army isn't going to spend any extra money moving you or your family anywhere. I couldn't believe what I just heard, but at the time I remember really appreciating the honesty of this person. I ended up stuck at the first stop in the U.S., and I had to pay a fee for my bags of $400. I sat at that airport most of the day and night while my family drove several hundred miles to pick me up. I had just been dumped on the street. My last few paychecks had been taken before my travels even started. When I got to my family, we had already been declared ineligible to renew the lease and pushed out of our apartment. I was basically jobless, homeless, injured, and financially destroyed. I got all of the gear I had in storage and turned it in at the closest military installation. It was accepted, and I was given documentation proving a time, date, place, and what I turned in. I lived in a motel that a local motorcycle club and the VFW paid for a while. God bless those gentlemen. It took weeks for me to scramble up enough money just to travel to my mother's home, where I knew I would be accepted with open arms. I tried to find work to get some cash together. I had to take out a loan on a trailer with no money just to move my things across the country. It was very small, so I was forced to throw away over half the things I owned and still left furniture in storage for the owners of the storage facility. I'm truly in shock and in disbelief by the time all the way I had been treated. I live with my mother now, and I have lost everything material of value that I ever worked for during this transition. My family is in shambles and has been torn apart and scarred from this horrible experience. I am still fighting small-town government for my only son, whose mother was killed in my absence. I have lived through worse, but I'm far from putting all the pieces back together. And they got a picture of him as in combat gear, and he's in a village with little kids. I've called office numbers, sent emails, sent supporting documents of expenses orders, and not received 1 cent from the Army in over 5 months. I even had responses from people claiming to be the Deputy Director of Travel Pay Finance, but still I have received nothing. Not 1 cent. It cost thousands of dollars in expenses and things that cannot be replaced just to move to what I'm calling home these days. I cashed out my retirement savings, and not only was it not even close to enough money, but about half of it was taken in withdrawal fees. Oh, man. This is my real life's experience. It was abusive, terribly corrupt, and more was taken than I had to give. Now, no one in the Army acts like they know me and could care less if I was robbed and then left on the street. I worked more than I have ever worked in my entire life in the Army, and this is what they did to me for my service. This is how the Army treats us soldiers. Whenever you see cutbacks or reductions in the news, this is how it's being done. One soldier at a time. Anything that costs, no matter how desperate the need, you can forget it. 5 years ago, it was nothing like this. It is disgraceful and disgusting. My God, why that guy is still alive is by the grace of God. That is horrible, absolutely horrible. That is, and I watched that piece of crap walking between lines of West Point cadets, arrogant, strutting, and he didn't deserve to be there. He should have been banned. He should have had to make his speech outside the walls. Okay. So, let me see what we're going to do. We're going to do a tune for this gentleman here. Let me see if I can find a good one. A tune for this gentleman. May God protect him and his son. And may he get with his son. And may he stay close to God. father and my grandfather, sir.